coming up next on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. It's Apropos of Something, co-hosted by Ellen Daniels and Nancy Lawrence. Apropos of Something welcomes experts, activists, and the marginalized from our community to discuss how the latest policies are affecting everyday people. Apropos of Something is brought to you by the Beckham team at Keller Williams. And now, here's Ellen.
This is 94.7 Apropos of Something, airing every Saturday morning from 10 to 11, co-hosted by me, Ellen Daniels, in our Charlottesville studio, and Nancy Lawrence coming to you from New York City. We seek out the most interesting people we can find with a passion for social justice, political activism, and the arts. We guarantee every show will be apropos of something. We're very grateful for the sponsorship of the Beckham team at Keller Williams Realty. Today, we're speaking with foster parents Jason Showalter and his husband Ryan Hathaway, and also the effervescent artist and educator Chicho Lorenzo. In addition, we have liberal redneck comedy tickets to give away for their show this Sunday. That's tomorrow in Richmond at 7. Win by answering a trivia question about today's show, which we'll ask at the end of the show, and then you'll message or PM WPVC's Facebook page. That's at 94.7 WPVC. And I want to know, Nancy, are you there?
Ellen, I am here, but do you want to know who's not here? May I continue?
Yes, all right. please
Someone
do.
Someone is not here.
Who's that?
Our president is not here. He's left us alone. We have the place to ourselves.
Don't you feel safer now, that he's in the air?
I think he's landed, actually. So yeah. Someone else is now unsafe. But I wish we could take, could we just change the locks on the place so that, you know, he can't return? Is there a mm-hmm. way?
Yeah.
If only we could do that.
I was hoping he would fall in love with the gold-plated whatever is in Saudi Arabia and just want to hang out there for the rest of his life.
You would think it would be his people, his gold leaf people were calling to him or something. But regardless, I was thinking about him, and I realized since our show is on Saturday, you know, and that I think we, thanks to him, it's my opinion anyway, we've lost the idea of the weekend, right? Well, I feel anyway. It's like it's vanished because even if you're going out to a farmer's market and collecting your lavender and your daikon radishes. And, you know, isn't it? Oh, it's always in the back of my head. You know, what did I miss while I'm gone? What do I need to refresh, you know, you know, with the hand over the browser? What, you know, what's the headline? What did he do? What happened? You know, so that's my feeling. I feel like we've, you know, technically it's Saturday, but we've lost the weekend, I feel.
I think in general we've lost the weekend. But you're right. You're right. There's always, I mean, especially this last week, oh my God, there's been something every single day, if not more.
Right. I mean, the travel ban started on a Friday night. He loves the weekend. Weekends are his jam for stirring up, stomach linings. I'll just say it's always upsetting.
So
anyway,
what I wanted to also, what I realized is that, so he's going to Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Rome.
Yeah.
And he's bringing a lot of baggage with him.
Yes, I know, and I think I read that the guy that wrote, I think his name's Stephen Miller, the guy that wrote the travel ban, that guy is writing, Trump's speech that he's giving in Saudi Arabia, which should be incredibly interesting, yeah.
So good, he can offend the Muslims, the Jews, and the Pope.
Yeah.
In person.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
All while eating his steak with ketchup. It's just going to, if he returns in one piece, it'll actually be sort of impressive, I guess.
And you know, another thing that was just the ones, so many sentences you could choose from what he said, but one line really stuck out. He said this week, there's no collusion between certainly myself and my campaign, but I can always speak for myself and the Russians. He said, zero. So he speaks for the Russians now.
I know. He's telling them more in the Oval Office than he's sharing with the people that he represents. It's beyond, you know, I know amazing and unprecedented are ever used too much, but he continues to, you know, go to that level on all of his decisions.
And all the leaks that are coming out, I was really impressed by the New York Times reporter, I don't remember his name, who's getting the leaks from people that are in the White House. He said that these are not people with sour grapes who have you know, something against a president in particular. He said he's talked to plenty of people like that in his lifetime, but these are people who are civil servants, staff at the White House, who are concerned with what's going on.
Right.
They're just,
that's when you know it's bad, right?
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, people in the White House are doing their best, or at least some.
Yeah.
Not all. Yeah, trying to get the press involved. I mean, they're like our last hope. You know, I think Elijah Cummings said something to that, not exactly what I said. He said it way better, but he was calling the press, you know, like, this is your, or the media, this is your moment, you know, to keep up the fight. You know, we need your help, obviously, with Democrats being a minority in both houses. But yeah, he sort of looked him in the eye on camera last night, and, you know, to your point about just people doing their, the press, the media, the fake media doing their job.
Yeah. I mean, the last leak I heard, because who knows, I'm sure there was something before, you know, right a minute ago. He said, I just fired the head of the FBI, and he's telling this to the Russians, okay? He was crazy, a real nut job. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And he said, I faced great pressure because of Russia. That's taken off. So another thing I can't understand is the people who cannot see what's going on, who voted for him, that still do not want to see.
I totally agree especially with not the nut job part, but with the last part. I know these are the same people, I'm sure you remember, during the election, that were convinced that Hillary was running a sex trafficking ring in a pizza joint in the basement that had no basement, but yet they can't make a Trump-Russia connection. That, you know, they need more evidence, or they're not sure, or they, as you said, they don't believe it.
Right,
not possible.
Right. Well, on that happy note, I'd like to talk about what people can do here, which is in our town, state, there is a primary election going on June 13th. Now, the interesting thing is, if you're going to be out of town on that day for summer vacation, the deadline to request an absentee ballot to be mailed to you is June 6th at 5 o'clock, and that's a primary for governor, which here the pertinent people are Northam and Perriello, lieutenant governor, House of Delegates, and some local offices. So that is a good day to take note of.
June 6th, that's really good. I hope I remind myself to remind you to say that at the end of this show. That's really important.
The primary is the 13th of June, and the if you need an absentee ballot, it's the 6th.
Okay, got it. I have one as well. In your town, the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank is hosting a family volunteer event in Charlottesville on May 23rd from 5 to 7.
Great.
And to join it, you need to either call 540-213-8402 to register, or you can go online to BRAFB, as in Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, BRAFB.org, and you can find out about it there.
Cool. Thanks, Nance. Another thing is, we had quite an exciting weekend last weekend here in Charlottesville. We had a Tiki Torch Nazi group here. We really were the KKK without their, you know, masking. That was last Saturday night in front of the Lee Park statue. And Charlottesville responded with 300 to 500 people and speakers at a candlelight gathering. And just a point I wanted to bring up, some people that I've spoken to, people of color, have pointed out this is not only extreme Nazis that we need to address, and of course we do need to do that, but the insipid, you know, the racism that just threads our society. So I looked up what some people of color had to say. This is not an extensive list, and I'm a white person, but these rang true for me as well. And some advice was to listen to stories of people of color, amplify the voices of black and brown people of color, talk to your family and friends, donate to anti-racism work, and know who you're voting for. I felt the need to talk. And next week we're going to talk more about that topic, and we'll give you details about that later. So we have an amazing show for today.
Excellent, because you know what? It is today. So today we should have that show.
Let's be in the present.
It worked out perfectly.
Yeah. So our first guest is the effervescent artist and educator, Chicho Lorenzo. Welcome, Chicho.
Thank you very much.
Good. You have a lot of fans. Every time I would say, I've got Chicho on the show, they would say almost unanimously, I love Chicho.
Thank you. Thank you both. And hello, Nancy and Ellen.
Hi.
Yes. Thank you very much for having me here.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So you mostly do, as far as your art, you mostly do murals around this town and probably other towns. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. Well, mostly in this town, because I started in here. What I did before all my life was painting on canvas or on wooden boards or illustrating. And
mm-hmm. And where are you from?
I'm from Spain, from Madrid.
Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. What brought you here?
The mother of my children.
Oh.
So I've been in Charlottesville for 8 years now and 3 years before in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That's where I was. That's where I was before I came to this lovely town.
Awesome town. But I have to say, in terms of art, it has had it all. So
It has had
so much art, and so that is for me. It was also I didn't speak any English at the time, so it was a little bit overwhelming. And you know, when things are growing, they are exciting. But once they are in Brooklyn, the art scene was a little bit like established already, and so I'm glad I came to Charlottesville, where I can still feel like we are moving forward.
Yeah. What do you think about the art scene here?
I love it. It's still a little bit traditional, maybe, but it always have those surprising candies, like the events that are organized at the Bridge or at the XR Park or other places.
Chicho, how would you describe your work?
I would say I paint... In terms of topics, I usually paint people. And the people, not exactly as they are, I paint people as not exactly as they are visually, but as they are, or as I appreciate them in terms of also energy, character, even hobbies, or so I paint the things that you like. If I paint a portrait of you, I would research what do you like to do, and it wouldn't be necessary that I paint you doing that. But you may have, if you like to play tennis, you may have the t-shirt with the pattern of a tennis racket or something. It tastes like that.
How do you approach that? I know you do a lot of mural work for restaurants in town. Mm-hmm. And how do you approach a restaurant and the person? How do you get that personality of the restaurant? And what goes through your mind as you're creating? And do you do it in the moment, or are you thinking about it for weeks?
The creative process is the longest one. Usually, I have, well, for example, a Sultan Kebab, it was a trip to Istanbul and other places in Turkey on scaffolding. I didn't go for real to Turkey. But
I see. I was like, wow, you really put a lot into your research and a lot of money.
I wish.
Okay. So on the scaffolding, you were. This was part of your process of being in Istanbul.
Yeah, so the owners, they are from Turkey, so they transmit they told me their favorite parts of Turkey, and then I just travel with them. In the case of Mas Tapas, my last mural, Tomas just transmitted me his enthusiasm about, in terms of place, about Barcelona, but also about community, children, farming, fair trade, and I thought, well, I have already all that. I share those values, so it was very easy. We talked for just a little bit, and I knew perfectly that a floating banquet will transmit that feeling, and he was very satisfied with it.
Wow, it does sound delicious.
What other restaurants have you, or public places? Is your work where people can see it in Charlottesville?
The Sultan Kebab, the Mas Tapas, the Southern, the music venue downtown, and I think a private residence, and then the rest are mostly schools. Schools outside, inside, public schools around town, and also in Crozet. But those are different approaches, because those with those I'd get the students to create with me.
How does that, if there is one way or not, but how does that happen? Does the school approach you, or do the students? What happens?
In most of the cases, always it has been the school or someone who approached me.
And do the students have like an idea that they want to want your help on, or does it go the other way, where you uh-huh. have something you think they'd like to work on?
Well, sometimes, but there's always some space. Most of the people, when they approach for an artistic project, they think they are not artists, so they are like, okay, we want this artistic project, and you are the artist, so you know how to do it. My approach in every case, is to let them know that they are going to create with me, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the last case, for example, the Albemarle senior student high school senior students, they called me last week, and I thought it was going to be like that way, but they have it very clear. No, we want you to paint this.
Gotcha. Well, is there a place that you'd love to paint here in town?
A place? You mean
like a wall? Do you go by it? Do you drive or walk by and say, "I want to paint this space"?
I would love to paint, and you know that corner on Barracks where they set those two color photographies, very big format, and one of them
like fall near 29.
Yes.
Or 250.
Exactly, in the exit of 250.
Okay.
That is a big wall, and I always wanted to make not only... I even have a specific idea of making a Trump deal, a visual effect. So instead of a flat wall, it's a hole. And in that hole, there's these many people working almost as columns, but they are not rigid, or they are just living life, but they are supporting the world up.
I hope it wouldn't be too distracting as I drive by.
Oh.
No. That's great. Yeah, that sounds great. So have you ever had any opposition, or has anything been political, or have you had a city that said, you know, you can't do something?
Not really. The only thing I have similar to that was in an exhibition at the airport when they told me these two pictures, these two paintings of two girl twins, they were naked, and they said, no, we cannot have that.
Really?
So I finally I took them home, and then my neighbor said, why don't you paint the clothes? And I thought, no, that's not... But at the end I thought, oh, it would be fun. So I painted the clothes, and so there's real clothes. And underneath there's
the naked
body.
What do you mean, clothing on the girls?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Gotcha. I'm going to look for that when I go to the airport next time and imagine that they really, I don't know.
No. They're not at the airport anymore. They were just for the exhibition.
Oh, I
gotcha.
Okay.
When did you start drawing, Chicho? When did you realize you were, you know, just taking up with it?
Very early, in math class with the more strict teacher of the school, when she told me, "Oh, that's an amazing drawing," instead of telling me, "What are you drawing? What are you doing drawing?" instead of attending my class, I thought, "Oh, I think I can make my life, and I can have an easy time with just drawing." So I didn't learn at that time that it's not just drawing and the talent, it's also the effort, the hard work that I learned afterwards.
Fantastic. We're going to come up to a break right now, and we'll come back. We'll continue talking with Chicho Lorenzo and also with Ryan and Jason. Welcome back to Apropos of Something. We're here with Chicho Lorenzo. And a little bit later on in the program, not too long from now, we're going to talk with Jason Showalter and Ryan Hathaway about being foster parents here in the city. And I think it has implications for everywhere. And during the show, we're going to give away some tickets to the Liberal Redneck. And we'll tell you how to do that by the end of the show. Hi, Chicha. How are you doing?
Very well.
Good.
Enjoying.
Chicha, I was wondering when you were, you know, talking about your time growing up in Madrid. Has that time affected how you view your art? Or yes, I will stop with that. Has it affected you as an artist? Your time in Madrid.
The living in Madrid.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, people in here in United States, they always tell me, "Oh, your colors are so Spanish, so vibrant." So I guess, yeah. I really consider my art and my mission is more or less to consider every art like universal. Since what I want to the people to feel is that art is a continuous inspiration, a continuous collaboration. I create because you inspire me, and I hope my art inspires you to do other art or maybe other kinds of expression. Yes.
I was wondering. Now that I'm imagining you painting, I was wondering, what does your studio look like? What does your studio space? How do you have it set up?
Mm-hmm. It's very, very clean. I met artists who paint like 7 paintings at the same time. I really focus on one, and when I'm not painting that one, I usually put it away, and I try not to look at it much if I'm not painting that. But
Go ahead. No.
What I do is having maybe pictures or music or that kind of inspiration, the pictures of other artists or other people or other things or going out looking for that collaboration.
Well, I was wondering, because some of the work you do are these big murals on other people's walls and other people's buildings, how do you prepare, you know, what, because you're doing it somewhere else, how much preparation can you do at your studio for that?
Uh-huh. I used to do it at the coffee shops mostly. I do it on my book. I always carry my book, and I'm always drawing and having ideas. So I'm not drawing now because Ellen told me that I'd rather don't flip pages and make noise with the papers.
I told them not to flip pages. So what? You see, you didn't bring notes because of me?
Well, no. I was saying about drawing and taking notes now.
Oh, I see.
I would have painted a portrait of you while we talked.
Okay. I'm breaking my own rules. Draw me.
Okay.
It's going to wind up at that wall you guys just located in Charlottesville somewhere.
And I have a request. I mean, in terms of like telling artists what to do, I shouldn't say this, but I have a request. You don't have to honor it. Can you put Nancy's voice somehow coming in?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Of course.
That's right. I'm sure it's right up there with the most charming melody you have listened to in your studio, mm-hmm. Chicho.
This is the kind of collaboration that I'm talking.
Oh.
Art. Gotcha. In my case, art grows. It's like grows. I mean, like a garden.
It's spontaneous.
Exactly. So you say something, and I react to that, and then it gives a different fruit.
And then people can participate in it. Is how it feels to me.
Exactly.
Right.
So, at the end, everybody feels like an artist.
Well, get my good side. I'm sure my voice has a good side. Make sure you capture that. No, I could never be a patron of the arts, obviously. I'm way too bossy, so never mind. Don't listen to me. Don't do what you want.
I'm enjoying a lot. Don't worry.
Good. And you have 2 minutes because you have to go. You told me you have to go.
Yeah.
We're not kicking you out.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Perfect. Yes.
Are you doing anything interesting today?
Well, I'm going to Bel Air Farm, looking for inspiration in the shape of greens and other products.
So, is it a secret project? What are you painting?
No, I'm not painting. I'm just collecting my share at the farm and hopefully eating.
And getting inspiration along the way.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Cool.
Teach, I was wondering what your kids think of your art. What is their reaction to all of the stuff you do?
Well, they are teenagers. They have other values, and I'm not saying that they don't appreciate my art, but they appreciate it in maybe more in terms of the appreciation from other people. Like, oh, Dad, I know that I know many people who knows you and like your art. Yes.
Have you painted them?
Yes, I painted them, and I have a boy and a girl, and she's an amazing artist, and he is also, but he doesn't practice at all. He doesn't practice a lot. If he did more, when he does more, because I know he's gonna have the moment when he's gonna feel like
motivated on his own. You don't want to force him, you're saying.
Exactly. Gotcha. That is.
Sure.
All right. Well, we're going to do a little. You can stay here and draw, but we're going to get ready for our next guest because you got to go smell the flowers and the leaves.
Uh-huh.
The trees.
I need to go. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you so much, Chicho.
Thanks, Chicho.
Awesome. So thank you very much for doing this with many, many other people to express.
Yes.
Bye. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you.
It was great to meet you.
Hey, Nance.
Yes. So it's that time in the show when we bring in a news of note. Is that what that Hey, Nance was about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen, I'm doing some dials over here. I'm doing some buttons. So.
Okay, very good. Take it away. Allow me, as always. My news of note happened on Wednesday when I'm sure you heard about this, but Erdogan's security detail, the Turkish president's security detail, beat up, attacked, whatever words make more sense to you, the Kurdish and American protesters on U.S. soil. About a dozen were injured, and one was critically injured, and none of them were charged, and the U.S. Didn't impose any sanctions as a result of this attack, and of course Trump said nothing, and I think I know why Trump said nothing, because he's so envious of authority, and I just have this feeling he was like taking notes for his next book, Dictatorships for Dummies, chapter 2, how to crack down on dissent. And anyway, because, chapter 1 is obviously just a big full-page spread of his electoral map. But truly, I am not at all surprised. I am incredibly disappointed that they said nothing, the White House said nothing about this attack on just protest, freedom of speech, not
right.
Nothing more. Anyway, what do you got?
Really, the only thing I have was the best news I've heard recently, which is James Comey will appear before the Senate Intelligence Committee in a public hearing after Memorial Day. So, three cheers for the democratic process that may still be alive and well. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I think I mentioned this last week, with Sally Yates and him as well. I'm just still, I am holding my breath. No one, he doesn't sip a bottle of water that's got polonium in it. I just, I'm really genuinely worried the guy's not going to make it to, wherever he's supposed to be to reveal whatever he needs to reveal to the American public. Yeah, I'm worried. I will remain worried.
I know. Put that guy in a padded cell, please. Somebody.
Yeah.
So, with no further ado, I'd like to introduce our next guests.
Please do.
They are Jason Showalter and Ryan Hathaway, foster parents living here in Charlottesville. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. So, what's your motivation for being on a show like this? In other words, why come to a radio show to talk about this topic? What is important about this to you?
Well, I think it's our experience of fostering just these past 4 months is
it's just opened up a sort of a new world to us of this whole foster experience. So I think it's something that people are just not really very aware of. So I think coming on a show like this just to get more awareness out there of what the experience looks like, even for people who, you know, are thinking about it but not sure, or people who just haven't thought about it, but there's such a need for foster parents in the community.
Mm-hmm. And so that, would you say it's a pretty desperate need here?
Yeah, and that's been it's increased recently with the opioid epidemic. Where there are more kids coming into care than we used to have. So I think in Virginia right now, we have over 5,000 kids in the system, and we have around 200 in our community.
And I'm sure there's a dearth of people willing to step up to be parents, and that's part of what that creates the desperate need. So with 5,000 kids and 200 locally, there's like a handful. Is that accurate, or what would you say?
There are a lot of people that kind of sign up for, so when you go into foster parenting, you sort of set guidelines of what you're willing to take into your home. There's a desperate need for groups of kids, sibling groups, families, and then teenagers. So there's sort of a backlog. And when we don't have people in our community to take the kids, they are moved further outside, so they leave our area, and therefore they're even further separated from their families and from their schools and from their friends and from the people they know.
And one of the stats they said in our training was I think every time a child is rehomed, so moved from one foster situation to another, their likelihood of finding a sort of a permanent home decreases by I think 25%.
You mentioned training. Sorry, I was just wondering what kind of training do you have? Did you have?
It's pretty intense. It's a 9-week training course, and it meets once a week for several hours, and that culminates into a final meeting, and we have a panel that's brought in to discuss their experiences as foster parents, as well as I think we had one gentleman who was raised as a foster child in the system. And then you kind of get to talk to them and hit them with a barrage of questions. We had an initial in-home visit from Marnie, who was our training coordinator, and she did a walk about our house and just made sure we were up for it before we actually entered in into the training process.
And the training itself, there's a lot that we cover. We talk about things like discipline and how that may be different for kids in foster care than maybe parents who already have their own kids. Just talk about the different needs of foster children there was sort of a different topic every week.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting because when I talk to a lot of my parenting friends about some of the stuff that we're learning every week, they're like, oh my God, I wish I had gone through this before I had kids. Because it's stuff too that's really helpful, like looking for signs that your kid has maybe experienced sexual abuse. Like, what do you look for? From that to attachment theory and how to form proper attachment with children. So the list goes on and on. We were hit with this stuff, and we learned a lot within the 9-week process.
And another big part of it actually was going through all these different scenarios and things. One of the overarching phrases was, it depends. So things are so situational from placement to placement and kid to kid that a lot of things, if you know, that you might run into with one placement will be totally different with another.
And what are some of those differences that they were telling you about, you know, for foster care parents versus parents of, you know, their own kids? What were some of the things they were pointing out to you?
A vast percentage of these kids have experienced some form of abuse or neglect. As a matter of fact, that's the primary reason that children come into care. And so with that, you have behavioral issues that come in tandem. So you have to keep your eyes peeled on that and how you react to a kid that's having a temper tantrum and someone who has basically just heard some sort of trigger word that's caused them to react and go into some sort of emotional state. Those are two different things altogether. And those are things you kind of have to look out for.
What is the difference between adoption and foster care?
Well, so with our training, we were actually certified to both foster and adopt. And so, but the agency that we work with, which is Community Attention Foster Families, CAF, they work primarily with just foster placements, and these are temporary foster placements where you're welcoming a child into your home or children into your home that need to be in a new location. And so for this agency, that's usually a temporary placement, but that could be, you know, anywhere from just a few months to it could be a few years. And the ultimate goal for those placements is to have them return home to their biological family. And sometimes that is, if they can't go back to their parents, they'll find other family members for them to go with. But then, of course, adoption, that would be, you know, bringing a child in your home that you become their legal guardian.
And are there ever issues with the biological family?
Well, it's, again, sort of case by case. One of the things that we were initially sort of anxious about, I think, was how that relationship would look with the biological family, especially as a gay couple. When one of the training sessions, that was something we asked about. There's another gay couple on the panel, current foster parents, and we just asked how that experience had gone with interacting with the bio family, and in their case, things had gone well. But there's just such a range of you know how that relationship could look, how involved the biological family is. So things are definitely they prepare you for being really awkward at first. It just, you know, by the nature of what's happening with the dynamics of everything. But you know, in our case, things actually went really smoothly with the biological family in the placement that we had, which was really great.
Yeah. So
have you done? Sorry, Ellen. Go ahead.
Yeah. Actually, let's take a break. We have a heartbreak right now. It just so happens at 94.7. This is Apropos, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking about foster parenting with Jason Showalter and Ryan Hathaway. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Apropos of Something on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We thank the Beckham team at Keller Williams for their support. We're talking with foster parents Jason Showalter and his husband Ryan Hathaway. Welcome back, you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The question I had before the break, I was just wondering, are you currently foster parents, and are you... how many times have you gone through this process? I don't think I know that.
Currently, we are not foster parents.
Okay.
We the kids went back with their biological parents several weeks ago. So we're still on the docket. We're certified, but right now we're taking a little break.
So, yeah, we had this was our first placement that we had that started back in early January. So we went through the training in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And what is it what do you think the thing that you would want people to know most from this experience, or, you know, if people thinking about it, what would be the takeaway?
Well, for us as you know, we do not have our own kids. It's been such a learning experience just being parents. You know, regardless of it being, you know, foster situation, we've learned a lot about ourselves, just how we are as parents. It's also been great the fact that we have been able to give these kids a home. You know, while their parents were getting things worked out. It's a different experience, I would say, or somewhat different for those who already have their own kids. But a lot of the foster parents we spoke to who are in that situation, it's been a great thing for their families as well. And you know, their kids having these you know, foster siblings of sorts, it's a unique experience.
Mm-hmm. And are there a lot of gay couples that you know doing the same thing? And it seems like a great thing to do if you want to have children. To get involved with.
We have friends that have adopted out of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And we had another gay couple that went into training with us, but I think at this point they haven't actually decided to take a placement. The thing I would want to say to people is, even if you are just entertaining this notion, I would recommend talking to any of the local agencies, and even going to possibly one of the first training sessions to see if it's something you're interested in. Because even if you go through the training session and you get certified, you don't have to take a placement. But it's something that you could get under your belt if the situation arises, if things change in your life and that you decide you want to do it. After you get certified, you just have to do 10 hours worth of training every year to keep the certification. So that's one thing I would say to people, because I found that the training session, even though at times it was really heavy, it was such just a deep dive of something I had never, ever really understood or knew about. I feel like I have a better understanding of how all of it works.
And throughout the training, the folks from CAF, Marnie Allen, they're so supportive, and they keep saying, you know, you can drop out at any time. It's fine. We're not, you know, it doesn't offend us or anything. So you could start the training. You could, you know, go through the whole training and then still, you know, decide it's not for you.
And the other thing I think too, like when I was talking with my family, my mom specifically asked the question, well, what are you going to do when they leave your house? You know, you're going to be, going to be heartbroken. This agency specifically encourages a lifetime bond with these kids. And mm-hmm. we've seen the kids several times, and we have a friendship now with the parents. So we've seen the kids several times after they've left our home, and we have this friendship now, and we were already planning stuff for the summer. Like, you know, trips to the pool, birthday parties, play dates with our neighbors, you know, babysitting for the parents so they can have a night out, that sort of thing. And so this is not like it's terminated once the kids go back home. It's a friendship and a bond with people for the rest of their life, hopefully.
And that's definitely one of the pillars that with CAF, with their whole training, they have these, I think it's like five different
still have them memorized.
Yeah, Marnie would not be happy. But one of them is forming this lifelong bond. So they just, because I think the sort of traditional view of like, oh, foster care, it's, you know, it's this traumatic thing where then the kids go back. And I think views of the foster system have been not so positive, you know, in the last few decades. But they're really working to counter that, and like Jason was saying, create this lifelong bond.
That is so great. I was actually wondering about that whole notion of saying goodbye, and I'm glad that you detailed that it is anything but that. So I'm going to go to the other side. What was it like? What's your memory of seeing, you know, your child for the first time that you were going to be taken care of?
Well, so we actually sort of had a preview of sorts, because with foster care, another aspect of this is respite care, where foster parents, they can agree to do respite care, which is sort of if another foster family needs, if they need a break or something for a weekend, or they're just like, they have to travel for something, CAF will try to line up another foster family that the kids can stay with for that weekend or that day or whatever it is. We actually had the kids that were placed with us, they were first staying with some relatives, and they needed a break to kind of do things at their house. So we had the kids at our house just for a day, and it was actually just the week prior to them coming into our home. That was a nice way to break the ice, really, and then we just had them for the day, and then it was later that week when they came into our home full time, and it was emotional, definitely, just also because you're seeing the parents, and you know they're definitely emotional. It's it's a traumatic thing for them, but it you know, eventually the kids settled in pretty well and pretty quickly at our house.
Mm-hmm. Good. And these agencies that you mentioned, I was wondering if you could just say what they were so people know, like, where to begin or how to, you know, get answers for themselves.
Yeah, so the agency we worked with was CAF, Community Attention Foster Families. And they work in Charlottesville City, Albemarle County, and Greene County. And so they're sort of a go-between between the foster parents and then social services. So in some other locations around the country, if you're a foster parent, you're just working directly with social services. But here, locally, it's CAF who is offering a lot of support in the whole process. So we had a caseworker from CAF who was sort of our main contact, and then there's a social worker from social services who was the main contact for the biological family, working with the parents, you know, for them to do what they need to do.
Wow. Did you get guidance from other people before, you know, even like to fill out the forms and what was going, you know, how many people would be now knocking on your door or asking you questions? Did you get advice from other people before you started, or did you just pick up the phone and do this?
So, I mean, we definitely spoke with other parents. We didn't have a lot of friends that had done fostering. We have friends that had specifically gone into a foster to direct adopt situation. A lot of our answers were questions were answered by the training coordinator, and through the training itself, they go over a lot of that. They go over the forms. They go over who you're going to work with, people involved in the system, all of that. So I think from the very beginning, those questions were answered for us, and they were very much on standby when we needed them or had questions or emailed them with our thoughts.
Yeah, I felt so comfortable anytime we had a question, you know, directing it to the folks at CAF, because they were always really helpful.
And what surprised you most about that process?
The getting approved, or just the being foster parents?
Anything?
Getting approved. What surprised you most about that process?
I didn't realize how in depth that they go, and I think that speaks to, you know, there is sort of this stigma that used to be attached to foster parents. With the agency we worked with, it's a comprehensive sort of background check, from interviewing your entire interviews about your entire life, your family, any abuse that you may have witnessed or experienced, criminal record check, fingerprinting, home inspection, all of that. I mean, they really vet you to make sure that you're the right person to be taking care of these kids, which is cool, but it was also like sort of a daunting experience to go through.
Mm-hmm. And about what surprised you most about being foster parents?
I think even having gone through that 9 weeks of training, in those first few weeks, we were still sort of thinking, what are we getting ourselves into?
Yeah.
Because there's no way to, you know, put definitely every specific case. But I think because we also had two kids, so it was two siblings, so jumping from zero to two kids, it was a challenge just sort of dealing with the day-to-day meeting their needs, and because they're you know, about 4 years apart, so we couldn't just have them both doing the same thing all the time, so we kind of had to be, both of us were on constantly.
Yeah, there was never a break. There was never I'm going to go into the kitchen and make a sandwich and not have them, you know, getting into something or fighting. We had to be on 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So it went from like, oh, these two fun happening gay guys on the town to like poopy diapers and, you know, breaking up fights and, you know, all of the time.
Yeah. Like, oh, I'll get home from work, I don't know, at some point, to like, oh, I need to get home by this time, because we're doing dinner, and, you know, very much more regimented than we were.
Yeah. But equal parts fun too. Like, we had a lot of good times. I some of my fondest memories were, you know, Saturday mornings when the kids first get up and playing and making breakfast with the eldest one. So it was sort of this mix.
So, yeah, sorry. So before we go, mm-hmm. We're going to have to end the program, unfortunately. Where are you now in this process with your lives and children?
So we finished up that placement a few weeks ago.
And yeah, right now it's just, I think we're focusing on just enjoying the summer. And then probably going to jump back into it by the end of summer or fall. Specifically, hopefully looking to adopt at some point. That's sort of our end game with this. So we definitely want to become dads. I told people that the fostering thing was going to be us dipping our toe into it, but it was more like a deep dive
yeah.
for us.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. That's really informative. Yeah. I would love to talk to you more on my own. Thank you. That's Jason Showalter and Ryan Hathaway, foster parents in Charlottesville. And we spoke earlier. I wanted to thank Chicho Lorenzo. So now for the question, because we have just a minute left, we're going to give away liberal redneck tickets for Sunday's show in Richmond at 7 o'clock on Sunday. The question is from our last segment: what did Ryan and Jason need to do that they wish most parents would need also to do before they could be foster parents? So, if you could go to the 94.7 Facebook page, that's 94.7 WPVC, and private message us, and then we'll get you the tickets.
So and then I also you can go to a public announcement.
Yeah, and also we're on Breaker. We're on the Breaker app now. I wanted to mention so you guys can subscribe to our podcast. Just search, and you can do it there. And a lot of weeks I forget to mention the thanks to our theme music, Springtide N354019800 is that lovely name. Thanks for that theme music that we play every week.
Do we have time for a palate cleanser, Ellen?
Yeah. No, we do. I just had to check the time.
I was just going to say the following. A shout-out to New Orleans, the Big Easy, for doing the Big Difficult. They have now removed the third of their four monuments to the Confederacy.
Fantastic.
And white supremacy. I know. They have taken another one, removed another one. They are persisting. What do you got? You got a palate cleanser?
Yeah, I just want to say next week we're going to talk about that very topic here in Charlottesville. I'm not going to give it away, but we're going to talk about that with some experts. And also debtors' prisons, we're going to tackle that topic, which I knew nothing about until recently. So tune in next week when we cover those topics, Nance.
Yeah, well, skim back up to the top of your notes and remind everyone in Virginia to register to vote if they're not registered for the primary. Do you have that thing handy?
Yeah. So June 13th is the primary in Virginia. That's important because we're going to determine who the governor is going to be, Perry Yellow, Northam, or also some local offices will be determined. So basically the point is if you're going to be out of town on June 13th, you can't vote. And what you need to do is request an absentee ballot to be mailed to you. And you have to do that by June 6th. So have at it online and figure out how to do that. That's important.
And you're all squared away, right? Got all your paperwork.
I'm squared, yeah. I'm squared. And also, we have a Twitter account, and we have some followers.
What? I know, we do have some followers. Yes, people have to, you have to follow us just so you can at least read what we're outraged about, but also we'd love to hear from you. We want to know what's going on and what's outraging you. So please follow us there so we can...
Definitely.
We can see you better.
So we'll see you next week.
You're so quiet while we're on the air.
We don't hear you. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Nance. And we will hopefully see you next week.
Yes, on the radio. Okay.